It's The Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and we're back, and this time we're going to release, well, we're actually going to review, not release, an album by the death metal band Death, and it's Scream Bloody Gore. It came out 25th of May 1987. It seems like a long time ago, on Combat Records, and apparently it's the first true death metal, and it's got good old Chuck. He plays bass and guitar. Did he play? Is he like Lenny Kravitz? He kind of plays most of the stuff on this album, Joe.
I think it was just this album. He just did the bass and the guitar. But yeah, going forward, it was all. He had a full band with him. I don't think he was that much of a virtuoso. No, and the bass on
good bassist though.
Yeah. Okay. I thought the bass was pretty basic on this, but I'm not a bass player. So no, if you like the bass,
well, I will point that out later on rather than spoil it. But vinyl and cassette, imagine having this on cassette, that would be cool. I wouldn't be able to play it, but I'd like to just have it. I kind of, these passed me by, and I never really got into them until you started going on about them, to be fair, and I was listening to the odd one here and there, and not actually listening to the albums. The first full listen of this album for me was at about 11 a.m. this morning, so I always try and do things right before I'm coming to review and talk about it, because I always find the first impression with me kind of lasts. Some songs I'll like more when I first hear them, but some songs I'll fucking hate. So this is second time I've actually heard it today. So 11 o'clock, and then I put it on just before I was speaking to you. So this is where I'm at. That's when I first heard it today. 30th of November 2018, I heard this album.
Oh,
when did you hear it?
Bloody hell. I don't know.
Long time ago,
I
then.
I don't know. Easily, well over 10, well, 15 years ago, I suppose. I don't know when I first heard it. How I first got into Death. In a bit of background, folks, we are going to. Eventually, I want to do all of Death's albums because they're definitely my favourite death metal band.
Mm.
Don't know if they're my favourite. Yeah. They're up there. And Symbolic is my top two favourite albums ever.
If anyone ever listened to this show,
it wrestles with Master and Puppets.
If anyone's ever listened to this show, I'm sure they're probably well aware of that fact.
But the thing is, I know Gully would like them, and he'd especially like the later stuff. So basically, I'm going to do all of the albums to get Gully into Death. Because I know you'll love them.
Mm.
And I know if you concentrate on an album at a time, if we do these in order, you're really going to get in. I know you're really going to get into them. And it's seven albums. Oh, and that includes the Controlled Denied album.
Which was a cluster of different things, wasn't it, I believe?
No, it was just his next project. He'd finished with Death and just did a new project with Clean Singing.
Hmm.
He wanted to interject Clean Singing. He was done with Screaming. And he just thought, well, I'm never going to get away with that under Death, so I've got to form a new band. Basically, that's how it went. And where am I going with this? Yeah, so remember Luke Nash? He did the Load episode with
us. Yeah, that shit album.
He's going to be coming back on the show soon as well.
The album's still shit, by the way.
Yeah, I know, but lo and behold, he hates death metal now. If I give him anything so much as thrash metal, he's like, no, that's too fast.
Really?
Sorry, my nose is blocked.
I still love
but
the
it
speed.
Was him, but it was him that got me into death metal, because it was him that got me into At The Gates, and it was him that gave me Death Symbolic. And he basically just went, they were a death metal. His version of the story was, they were a death metal band and they were bloody horrible. The first stuff's crap. Referring to this album.
Mm.
And he said, they were the first band, arguable, I know, that went, right, there's only so much we can do with this, and they interjected melody in to their sound, and then later on made Symbolic. Now, I got into Symbolic, and it was one of those albums. When I first heard it, I didn't quite know what to make of it, and I knew I'd just put it on again. You know, it was one of those albums. Anyway, eventually I got obsessed with Death, and I had to work my way backwards, basically. I was going to record shops and just looking in. They were hard to get hold of, by the way, at the time. They've all been reissued now. But getting hold of them originally was a bit of a bastard. So
we're talking £100 dickhead on Amazon special, yeah?
No. I hadn't started shopping online at that point either. That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
So it was, you couldn't just go to your local HMV and pick them up.
Mm.
So over the course of a year or two, I would buy them one at... No, funny enough, I found them. I'm seeing how hard they are to get hold of. But Bluewater at the time had about 3 or 4 record shops, and Bluewater hadn't long opened. And I remember I was in Bluewater and I picked up about 4 albums then and a DVD. So I managed to get them a big chunk of it then. And then over the next year or so, I would find one here and there. I mean, I used to go record shopping on payday, and I would go up to London when I was young and had money.
Remember that? I don't.
I'd get paid, but I was living at home, so pay me rent, pay whatever.
Pay your keep. My mum was so reasonable with keep that I could have a really, really active social life, and now it's just, it's not like that anymore.
But I would get the train to London on a Saturday with an empty rucksack. I just used to empty my rucksack and just go there with an empty rucksack and come back with a full one. And I just, there used to be so many record shops you could go to.
Oh, yeah.
Mental. I'd go to Piccadilly Circus, I'd go to Oxford Street. From Oxford Street, I'd walk into Soho, and then I'd go to Camden. And record shops then had ticket offices as well, so you can even buy tickets to gigs.
Oh, yeah, that was where I'd purchase all my tickets and pick up an album in Liverpool. Yeah.
So over time, I was collecting the albums then, and I dread to think how long ago that was, to be honest.
Long time.
But with Deaths, over the course of the next 7 albums, you really do see an evolution, you know. And over time, I don't think Chuck was quite the musical genius I thought he was, to be honest. He was fucking great, but he was a very good visionary.
I was going to say, they do have him on a plinth, don't they? He is kind of one of them plinth musicians.
Well, dying does do wonders for your career. True. But he was a very good visionary, and he was one step ahead of the game, you know. And, no, he's not the man that invented death metal. No, he's not the man that the first ever person to put melody into death metal or do odd time signatures. No, he wasn't. But I don't think that was something he really, you know, from everything I have read, he didn't quite... Sorry, if he just caught a bang then, I just smacked a fly against the wall, fucking Mr. Miyagi style.
Did you kill it?
Yeah, fucking Bruce Lee, mate. Anyway. I don't think he was comfortable with it either. He felt a lot of pressure, you know. He wasn't that comfortable in the spotlight. And, if you watch this new documentary that's come out as well, you know, he was a bit of a complex character, and he did throw his toys out of the pram there and then. But I think he had a lot of pressure at a young age. I mean, the guy was in his fucking 20s at the time, and... You know, he wasn't on drugs. He was human, and he had rows with people. You know, if that's a fucking crime, we'd all be in prison, you know?
Yeah, that'd be in jail for life.
And the thing is, everyone kind of forgets as well, everyone did well after working with him. Especially towards the end of the band, he went through members like anything. He was going pretty much a different lineup on every album. Mm. Give or take, but he so he had his vision of what he wanted to do, and the musicians he had kind of made that happen. But I mean, a famous one was James Murphy. I mean, because of Death, we've got James Murphy. And I was listening to a pretty in-depth interview with him, and he said, you know, he fell out with Chuck, but he was quite quick to he made the point, look, let me just point out, he was 23 and I was 24 and he was 23 or the vice versa, you know. We were fucking kids,
you know. Bag of hormones and anger.
He went, I joined the band, he'd been on tour with Agent Steel, he'd done a bit, he was like hot and up and coming, he thought he was the bollocks, and Chuck, you know, in hindsight went, fuck you, you prick, this is my band, I had 2 albums under my belt when you come along
on your bike.
And it was just a clashing of egos, and you know, there, someone said, you know, that he was a bit stingy with his money, or he's actually quite to slam that down. He went, no, it was never over money.
Mm.
He went, I want to make that point now. He was a lot of things, but he weren't a thief, you know. So he went, no, it was only ever artistic directions and clashes of egos. And I put it mainly down to the fact that we were fucking both in our early 20s, you know. So, but like I said, you do see, and you will see an evolution from album to album. And I can't think of another band that changes as much as this band changed, whilst keeping their sound, by the way. It wasn't like Metallica where they just did a complete left turn
halfway through.
And yeah, so I thought the best place to start really was at the beginning. And yeah, I don't know if you want to go into, is this the first ever death metal album?
That's what everyone says, and I don't really have a say in this, because I don't fucking know. So I'd lean towards probably.
It depends who you speak to, but I do think some, you always get the person that says, no, it's this or it's that. And I think they're just trying to look clever, to be honest. There were albums that the template was there, or there were certain elements there. So some people will say it's the early Necrophagia stuff. But then, you know, their first album came out in 1987. When did Scream Bloody Gore come out? Do you know? When did it come out?
Yeah, it's 25th of May, 87.
87, so yeah.
Around the same time frame.
Yeah, like. Necrophagia had, I mean, I don't think their first album was a death metal album, but all the elements of what we recognise of death metal now are there, you know?
Mm.
And The main argument is Possessed, the first Possessed album. What was that called? Seven Churches.
Mm.
It has a song on it called Death Metal, and it was one of the first albums. It's a thrash metal album, but it's the heaviest kind of thrash. I don't think anyone had really gone that heavy at that time. And I think this album was the next logical step. So
this is very fucking thrashy.
What I would say about Possessed's album is, yeah, there's certain things in place, but metal has never just come out with one album and bang, that's it. Every album, every band with every album, it's like a wave, isn't it? And with every wave, you get that new evolution.
Little addition.
And
yeah,
yeah,
the little cherry
goes
on the cake.
I'm doing this band, but a bit heavier. I'm doing that band, but a bit faster. I'm doing, you know, that's how, you know, when we were talking about Black Sabbath, was that the first ever heavy metal album? Well, yeah, you had Iron Butterfly, and you had Cream, and you had, you know, Jimi Hendrix, and
natural progression.
Yeah, it
That's
was natural
it
progression. It all evolved from blues, but when Black Sabbath dropped, that was it. We were there. There was no going back there. This was, and that's what I'd say about Scream Bloody Gore. Scream Bloody Gore is a death metal album, unmistakable. There is no fucking doubt in anyone's mind that is a death metal album, and I think that was the first fully evolved. Right, no mistaking, you recognise it as soon as you hear it. It's like with heavy metal in general, when you say what is heavy metal, you can't describe it, but you know what it is when you hear it. And
yeah,
I would say, with Possessed, Seven Churches, yes, there's certain bits in place, and yes, I think they laid the template unknowingly, and Death gave it the first fully formed. It was the first fully formed death metal album, so going from orange to red, there's different shades of orange. At what point does it become red? You could fucking argue all
it's
that all day.
It's a tipping point,
isn't
it? Yeah. It's a tipping
but
point.
This was red, unmistakably. Yeah. Possessed was orange with, you know, the brightest of colours with elements of red. And if you looked at it close up, you might be red. But if you looked far away, it might not have been. No. You could debate all day. The thing is with Seven Churches, when people talk about that, they go, oh, well, it's got this and it's got that. It's got that. It's like, yeah, it's thrash metal, though, isn't it? Well, yeah. That's about it. And mainly as well is the vocals. Everyone goes, who invented the growl? You know? And that is like asking who's the first person to wear flares. You know, Cam Lee arguably started it with Mantis, which was with Chuck Schuldiner. Mantis split up and Chuck went on to form Death. So he might have rubbed him off, and he got it off of Cam Lee. Oh, God. So anyone could, you know, the guy from Broken Hope, the original singer, Joe something, him and Chris Barnes, I think, perfected it. But, again, you could argue all day the toss with it, you know. But, yeah, I would say, is this the first death... This is the first, undoubtedly, death metal album. It all went from here. Night of the Living Dead wasn't the first ever zombie film, but every zombie film coming out today, the template is set on Night of the Living Dead. You know, this was the game changer. This was the point of no return. Death metal became a thing from this point on. That was the tipping point.
Well, I will take your Yoda musings on this one, and I'll go with you on that. And let's get on to the first track, Infernal Death. I love the intro. Die! I like it. It is death metal.
Yeah.
The singer more than the music, I would say, at times. Agreed. It's very fucking thrashy death metal, and there's a few bands who do it, and yeah. I'm listening to the reissue from 2016, and the solos on it are just great. Musically, fucking spot on. I haven't paid attention to it until you raved about them, to be fair, and I wish, after hearing the first song, that I had paid more attention, especially when I was fucking 16. Never mind, fucking 40 bastard one. Great opening track. Really like it. My cup of tea. Love it.
I'm so glad you said that, because you're going to be in for a fucking good ride. Because I thought you were going to be a little unsure with the... Because you're a little selective with your death metal. It's got to be awesome or not at all.
Yes.
I thought you would get into them a bit more later, to be honest. But when we got to those albums, you'd go, right, it was worth going through these to get to here. But if you're fucking happy from day dot, then, yeah, this is going to be a good seven.
From the first track so far, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic doomy intro. Dun, bam, 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 bam. And just that awesome rhythm kicking in. When that scream kicks in, again, nowadays, death metal vocals are so inhuman sounding. He's just, you could tell.
Guttural.
He's just gone for it. It's just gone, ah!
Yeah. You know? It's a different kind of fucking death metal. It's not your fucking guttural shite that I hate that sounds like Cookie Monster. It's not that. And I'm glad that it's not that. So glad.
And, you know, a fantastic riff at the beginning that it kicks into. And it's funny because I always thought of this album as, you know, oh, this is the horrible stuff at the beginning, because that was how I was taught. But there's still a lot of melody in this, really. I mean, these are well put together songs. It isn't just a load of mess. I mean, it's not like Carcass's first album.
It's not just chug cookie monster. There's structure and there's sounds that you don't normally associate with this type of aggressive music, I would say, as well.
I think as well it is thrash ramped up as well. I mean, these could have been,
it's thrash beefcake thrash, isn't it? It's like steroid thrash, but with death metal kind of vocals, and I'm all in so far, to be fair.
Right, now we've got the song that stayed in the band's set list right up to the end, the mainstay, Zombie Ritual. What do you reckon of this?
Okay, let's just address the elephant in the room. The sound quality is shite. It's shite, but...
It would be, wouldn't it? Come on.
It would be from the 80s. Even the remaster, it sounds shite. But I would mark it down for that normally. But it's another one of them albums where it's quaint and I forgive it. I like it because it sounds like from when it's from. And I like it because that's what it sounds like. I don't know why that happens sometimes. It only happens with very few albums. But it sounds really distant at times. But I like it. The bass riff is good. And this is what I'm going to continue to say throughout this. You can tell, I was thinking to myself, is this bass player guitarist? Turns out it was Chuck. He is playing the exact same riffs on the bass as the guitar is. Very few bass players actually make the effort to do that. They're all about little fills and single notes. When it comes to music like this, if you're playing along doing exactly what they're doing, one, you're quite technical. Two, it sounds fucking awesome. It sounds like an early Sepultura sound. Do you know from...
exactly. But
it's got that kind of sound.
Yeah,
but like Zombie Ritual, I can actually forgive the clarity of this song and the clarity of the album, because I like the music. They've got great fucking solos. It's blistering, and first two songs for me, they're smashing it. They're totally smashing it. I'm really getting into it.
You remember the last episode when I said you got that Slayer riff
They got that really distinctive. Yeah. Well, I think this was really born here with Death. That that stayed with them throughout all seven albums.
You can, yeah, it's kind of an announcement riff, yeah, isn't it? It's like, I'm announcing this song, here it comes.
Yeah, if you listen to Scream Bloody Gore and then The Sound of Perseverance, you're listening to a completely different band. But over the course of the seven albums, you see how they get from that point to the next point.
How they
but
move
even
on.
Then, some of the riffs, if you listen to it backwards, so if you listen to The Sound of Perseverance first and then put Scream Bloody Gore on, with the first track, you'll be going, bloody hell, this is a completely different band. But when you hear this opening riff, you'll go, I see there. That's the echo of what's to come in that riff alone.
The precursor of the future.
It's just such a great song. It's just such a fun, head-banging... Ritual. It's fucking awesome. I love it.
At times, his vocal style doesn't really change. You can see he's going all out, and that's not really a fucking a detractor. It's just something you noticed. You can't say, oh, we sung like that on the last one, but there's nothing fucking wrong with it because it's good. That's where I'm at with it. To be fair, solos are on point though. It's very you can see so much shit that come from this. Testament stuff later on, you can see people have stole stuff from this album. You can hear it in other bands all the way through, from thrash to death metal now to all sorts. It's another one of them albums we picked up on that have kind of come full circle, and people will rave about them, and I understand why, because of some of the songs on here. It's given birth to lots of different styles, this album, I think.
Well, thinking of, he was 20 when he recorded this.
Wow, you know? I wasn't that good when I was 20. I don't think I'm that good now.
Yeah, and so, you say where Testament picks it up. I mean, James Murphy played lead on the third album. That was his first proper album, and he ended up joining Testament later on. But I think when thrash metal was really going through difficulties and bands were either splitting up or changing their sound, you know, some went more commercial, some went grungy, some tried following Metallica and going slightly commercial. Testament embraced the underground. They went, well, what's happening underneath us? And got into death metal. And they didn't fully go death metal. I mean, I suppose they did a little bit on Demonic.
Mm.
But yeah, they took on the underground. I mean, we'll just go down a level then and headline there, you know. And yeah, they hired Steve DiGirio from Death and Sadus. Hired James Murphy, who is in Death, you know. Late at one point, Jim Hogland joined them, you know. And
but based on the noise they're putting out sound. Now, why wouldn't you? Fucking the musicianship on this is fucking spot on. It's spot on. I wish they'd done a better job of the remaster, but what could you do if the original recording wasn't up to snuff? That's the only detractor I can see on it so far. I just wish it was more open and less boxed. But if you've got the really shittiest fucking recordings in the world ever, I've not heard the original, so I can't comment on it. Well, so have you? Are they that shite?
It has been tidied up as best it can, but you got to think as well. You got to think, well, they didn't know how to record death metal at the time, you know.
So it was probably mixed fucking mad.
I mean, Scott Burns became the death metal guy later on to go produce him at the Morrisound Studios. And yeah, when you look in that guy's CV, basically everyone started piling into Morrisound because he found that death metal sound, you know, and it all went from there. But at the time, the person recording this probably didn't know what he was doing, you know.
Oh, well, I can relate to that, because when I was in a band, in a heavy metal band, like quite heavy and big chunky riffs, we recorded with this guy whose previous experience was Pop Axe and fucking Ken Dodd and the Diddy Men, and literally recorded the Diddy Man, and Ken Dodd ripped him off. But I couldn't hear my bass. It pissed me off. It was non-existent and it sounded like a pop song, and that was because of how he mixed it, because he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. And yeah, I could see that if it's something new, people are going to go, oh, I don't know what to do. It's like when you listen to some of the shite in the 90s as well, some of it just sounds terrible now because it's new, and it's okay, how do we make this sound good? They didn't know how to do it. And yeah, I could see that being the case. Denial of Life, strong riffs, I always like to record my notes on a first listen if I've not heard an album, so I can give the raw emotion, and the raw emotion from this is I really like it. It's thrashy death, and you can hear the music that inspired so many others through it, and the drums, guitar and bass are on point. And I can imagine just going back to 1987, sticking this in the fucking cassette player, playing it and going, what the fuck is this? This would just go, woo! kind of thing.
Just a bit of context. You got Megadeth. This guy, Randy Burns, produced it. I didn't actually look into this. He did produce Peace Sells Who's Buying the year before. And Dark Angels, Darkness Descent. And the same year he also recorded Agent Steel's Unstoppable Force. So he was doing metal, but again, this was a big leap forward with, you know.
You can hear the tinny thrash sounds in the guitars, though, so yeah, that would make sense. It is kind of a tinny sound, so yeah. And it's a sure, fast-paced one, and that's the thing about this album. You don't realise how far on you are into it when you're listening to it, because it just hits you dead quick and then fucks off. It's one of them.
He also did Seven Churches by Possessed in 1985, so there you go. There's an egg on my face there.
Where do we know what we're talking about? But yeah, it's got a thrashy-ish sound.
Even still, I don't think it was ever... you know, turned up quite that loud, played quite that fast, and with the vocals, you know. But, yeah, there you go.
You probably have to step back from the mic when you're doing death metal, not fucking get them up close. I think that's the case. I think we're guilty of that when we get excited about an album. We'll talk really, really loud, right up at the mic, because we're excited about something, and then it'll sound like a raspy fart on the recording. But yeah, I can see it being fucked up. But Denial of Life, it keeps going. It's short, fast-paced songs, and I'm into it. Loving it so far.
It's pretty much, I mean, this whole album, let's face it, again, they're 20. They're learning their craft on this album, and the formula pretty much stays the same throughout the album. Nice little riff. Bum bum, jugga 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 jugga. You know, verse chorus verse. It's quite a basic verse chorus structure throughout.
And nothing wrong with it.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. They're finding the formula and they're just sticking to it. But yeah, it's pretty much starts and stops going forward. But Denial of Life is pretty much the same as Zombie Ritual. Opening riff. Chugga 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 comes back to that riff during the chorus, but it has a really nice melodic solo at the end. And then we're going into Sacrificial, again same sort of thing, doomy intro, boom, dun dun, ba-na-na, you know, and then speeds up and gets really nasty. One thing I noticed though, the choruses and all this are all catchy as well. Like you will.
You'll find yourself singing it in your head when you've listened to it.
They do all have their own little distinguishable
little
chorus.
Hooks.
Yeah.
Yeah, little hooks. And I noticed that after listening to it like the first time this morning, when I was trying to wake up, I'm singing it and I'm like, oh, I'll listen to it again. Just to get rid of the hooks. And it is. The intro on it are good. His lyrics are pretty good, actually, and you can make out what he fucking says, even though it's a really distant vocals, and that's the recording process. But I like the slowdown riff on this one in particular. It's very menacing, it's stompy, and this is the best track for me so far, riff-wise. The big menacing riffs, the shouty lyrics, pick of the bunch, and there's no letting up. And, like, I have no idea why, when I was growing up and listening to music like this, that I wasn't listening to this. I don't know how or why it wasn't on my radar at the time, but it fucking should have been. And Sacrificial, they can do no wrong so far for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Who was I speaking to about recently? Yeah, I've only just listened to Deceased. And I just listened to their new album. I'd never listened to them before. And they've been going since 1985.
It's weird when someone just totally passes you by.
Yeah, and someone just said to me, like, where the fuck have you been? I went, well, where have you been? Who are you?
Yeah, I've been somewhere else. Fuck off.
Me, you know?
Yeah, you cunt. Share your knobhead.
So, you pick up, you know, it's all right getting Kerrang! Magazine every week, whatever it is, but you discover bands for the medium that you are used to, you know, and nine times out of ten as well, it's friends.
And if none of your mates had this
it's
album,
not like the, it's not like it is now. The internet's just bombard you with shit, so you can be accused of missing out on stuff then. You had to have someone who was into it. They had to do you the copy on tape because piracy was rife even then. And it was just one of them things. You're not going to go out and spend like something like 15 quid on a brand new album if you've not listened to it before, because there is only so much money when you're fucking 15, 16. Now you can just go on Spotify and hear it for free, so you do get overloaded a little bit.
And you're also, you're limited to what the record shops have got. Because again,
exactly,
the luxury of looking up an album and clicking order, you just didn't have it back then, you know? It seems it's such a simple thing now, but you didn't have Amazon back then.
Yeah. Even though they're a cunt that never pays taxes, they've made a lot of people fucking ears full of music, so we can thank for that. And Black Friday shit, where I buy electric plugs that turn themselves on when you talk to them. Yeah, I bought one. But Mutilation, frantic
love
intro.
This song. Sorry, go ahead.
It's a great. I am enjoying this album. The 1 minute change in the song is great, and I can just imagine my younger self with me fucking Slayer top on and me undercut and me dyed black hair, long black hair, would just be into it. And I regret not having heard this sooner. It's five songs in this album, and it's not let up any pace. For that, it's been really great, and it's actually given me a slap around the head. Like, what are you playing at? Why haven't you listened to this before, you soft cunt? And yeah, this is probably my favourite one so far.
This and Zombie Ritual are the hits, really. These were the two mainstays, and in the set list, you know. But also, this is the most covered song. The amount of covers I've got of this record, of this track, is crazy. But yeah, fantastic riffs. That Mutilation, and then yeah, just that awesome chorus. Just Mutilation, 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 you know. And yeah, I've got the best version of this. Actually was Massacre, Rick Ross and Terry Butler, who were on the next Death album, who Chuck had done a band called Mantis with Rick Ross, and they'd split up. Chuck did this album, but then Ross joined Death for Leprosy. But in that meantime, he'd formed Massacre with Terry Butler. I can't get the drummer's name there, Bill, and Cam Lee. But and then they would do Massacre again after the band's Death, or that lineup of Death at least, split. And anyway, a few years ago, they put him and Rick and Terry put together Massacre with a new singer and a new drummer, and the bonus tracks of that album they put out called Back From Beyond, which I thought was a really good album. A lot of people whinged that it weren't the original lineup and all the rest of it, as they do, but it's a good death metal album. And yeah, in the bonus tracks they did, I think they did a couple of death songs, but I can't remember which ones, but they did do Mutilation, and their version of it, you can imagine, today's guitars, today's production, real raw heavy vocalist. Meaty. Yeah. And it shows you how brutal this song still is. You know, it would have been brutal at the time, maybe a little tame now, but them covering this song today,
like a breath of fresh air,
it just shows how heavy it still is, you know. But yeah, fantastic song. And I would say either this or Zombie Ritual is probably my favourite on the album.
I'm kind of leaning towards it, but like, yeah, I'm a decent one. I'd like to hear the new one, new cover of it.
There's two others. There's still two highlights to come. It's pretty consistent though. So
yeah, so we got Regurgitated Guts. The names of these songs are telling you exactly what it is on the tin. It's like Ron Seal. It's exactly what it says on the tin.
You can imagine, yeah. This is prototype Cannibal Corpse, you know.
It is, isn't it? It fucking well is.
By the time Cannibal Corpse released the first album, Death had moved on from this, because he only did gore lyrics for the first two albums.
Yeah, well, there's no rapey rape like Cannibal Corpse on it, but yeah, there's everything else besides. Well, that's Cannibal Corpse, isn't it? Rape, knife, rape, arse, rape. That's Cannibal Corpse. But like, yeah, Regurgitated Guts. You know what you're going to get? This is music to rebel to. Turn up to 10. And in my case, I carve Slayer into my wall. I would probably be carving Death into my wall right next to Slayer. I'm really enjoying it. I want to get up and headbang into a pit. I want to put my old black leather jacket and have hair again. And every song thus far hasn't let up. I love the aggressive, thrashy, spit out death metal lyrics in this one. Again, it keeps going. I'm fucking loving it.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of the same, but in the best possible way, isn't it? It's there's not. It's kind of hard, sort of saying each track without repeating yourselves. As I said, the formula does kind of stay the same with this, but it is great riffs, it is great choruses, great hooks, great, and it, you know, the melody was there from day one. I don't get, you know, it gets a lot more melodic later on, but no, it's still there now. And
yeah,
but it's still raw, it's full of energy, it's full
it's
of piss and vinegar.
It's angry. And,
yeah,
piss, vinegar and razor blades.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah. And the next one, baptized in blood, another opening spot on riff, and then the speed, the crushing speed, which I'm all about, fast fucking aggressive shit. This album zipped along. We're fucking nearly up, more than halfway through now, and it's zoomed along without you noticing. I've forgotten at times to type me notes. I'm typing up the last song in the next song because it's just kind of zipping along. And the drumming and riff wise, this song shines out for me. I would say I wasted my youth not hearing to this. My youth was a lie. 3 minutes in, the riff change is great. The riff change was great. The bass keeps up with the guitar, and it makes sense that Chuck was playing the bass on this one because he's keeping up and he's playing the fucking guitar riff with it. I like that. That's talent, and more bass players should do that. And I always try to keep up with the guitarist because the guitarist would always try and fucking do mad crazy ass riffs in bands I've been in that they thought I could never keep up with. I would always keep up, you fucking cunt. So I've got fingers and you've got fingers, and I'll keep up with you as best I can. So I always hated bands that play fast and bassists just play the minimum. It's not the minimum, it's aggressive. You get aggressive too. It's one of the longer songs, this one too, and you don't actually notice, which is not a bad thing. I'm loving this all the way through, and I haven't had a bad word to say besides the production, and that doesn't even make it sound shit either, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I just can't get away from that.
The thing is with the production, I don't think it would sound the same if it was a cleaner or a bit more. If it, you know, if they were in the, if Bob Rock had produced this, you know, I don't think
it would be gay.
It wouldn't be the same. That rawness is also part of its charm, you know.
Mm.
And you know as well, Chris Reichardt, is that his name? He is drumming 100 miles an hour. You know, he's drumming as fast as he can. There's no triggers. There's no, you know, studio makeup with what you'd get today. That is right. You're recording. Go.
Do your shit.
Yeah, and that is him, you know. And you know, this is probably done in one or two takes. You know, they didn't have time to fuck around in them days.
All the money either. Tape was expensive, especially in the fucking 80s. So yeah, you can see this. Like, you've just got to be tight, and you've just got to bash it out. No fucking about. No double takes. Yeah, but, and that on its own, amazing stuff.
But
let's be honest, it's great.
Baptized in Blood is just really dark and atmospheric, you know. And this is the soundtrack to a horror film, you know. It is, if we could put a horror film.
Hammer horror films. This would be it. Like have you ever watched Horror Hospital, where they've got the killer ambulance that goes around chopping people up outside when they're trying to escape the horror hospital?
Nah.
That's it. Watch that film. It's cheesy and shit, but Horror Hospital, man, it's just on point for being cheesy as fuck. Takes us on to Torn to Pieces. Okay, another good intro, and I hear Shades of Priest, and I bought a couple of Priest albums for the pricely sum of £1. There's this charity shop, and I always go on about it in this show. It's fucking amazing. So many good albums I bought for fucking 50p and £1. I'm just gonna jizz on over it on every fucking show.
We should do a Priest episode soon, actually.
Well, I've got a couple of their albums sitting there now that I need to listen to, and it's aggressive, furious, angry, and it doesn't let up. And I've not got a bad thing to say about it. Okay, the singing, okay, you can be accused of him kind of sounding the same a little bit all the way through. But I can make out what he's saying, and I normally mark things down for shitty sounds and stuff, but I can't. Riff-wise, the changes are great. The little spot right before the solo on this one is spot on, and this song just stole my top song of the album so far because of the little bit of riff before the solo. I'm just like, ooh. Yeah, loving it.
Chorus one. That one.
It's amazing that a little bit of a track can make you like it so much, but this has turned out to be my top track so far, and I'm enjoying this all the way through. This 15, 16-year-old me was a dickhead for not getting into this stuff. I should have had a poster up of next to Slayer, next to fucking Dead Skin Mask. This is probably up there for me as one of them songs where I'm like, fuck me, this is fucking so good. So I'm loving it. I'm totally loving it.
One thing as well, with the reissue, the artwork was given a once-over as well. I'm looking at it now, and the colours were richer, the detail in the background, the skulls in the background, the chair, it didn't look like that good when I bought the original, like when I bought my version years before. It looks a lot glossier and a lot nicer, and I love that artwork as well. It's just awesome. You know this is a death metal album just by looking at it, you know. No, Torn to Pieces are good, but we are now coming to the end, and
we're getting there.
This fantastic opening riff to Evil Dead, based on our favourite film. Check out the episode where we did the commentary on it, and yeah, I can see the fucking hand coming through the floor at this point. Can you?
Yep. I'm loving it. I'm loving the fucking film as well. It's the quintessential horror film, in my opinion, and this song does it fucking justice. I've heard this one before, and I don't know where and when, but I have. The solos are on point. There's no song I've heard so far as poor. This has been immense and nothing short of spectacular, and I always try and think back about when in time this was out. There was nothing like this. This is a game changer, and if I could go back to 1987, okay, I was like 10, I wouldn't have been into it, but like when I was getting into this type of music, this would have blew my fucking head off. A game changing, amazing track, and there hasn't been a bad track on it so far, and I'm loving it, and the film's fucking amazing too. And if you've never watched The Evil Dead and you listen to metal, then you're a prick. You're a goddamn prick. Sort your head out and go and watch it.
It's just those subtle little things that sort of echo what's coming in later. And I think if you were thinking this is just a caveman bashing a rock against his head metal, that little riff at the beginning sort of shows there's a bit more going on here.
Yeah, it's more in depth than the shite that we get subjected to now. This is why I've probably not gone into death metal as much, because I never listened to the stuff that come before it, that what we get now, because we do get bashed on the head with it now. It's there seems to be a lot of it about, which is just cookie cutter. Death cunt minge. There's too much of that and not enough of this. And yeah, definitely a game changer. You can see all kinds of genres coming from this, and you can see why he was put on that pedestal. Maybe a little bit too much, but you can see why he's been put on his little plinth, his chuck, because I've really enjoyed this. And yeah, if there's more of this to come, I'm all in.
Oh mate, yeah, you've got. I want to sacrifice me the next 8 weeks of my life and just to him. you're in for a treat, mate. You're in for a treat, and yeah, again, really melodic solo as well, and again, this song just has a really sinister atmosphere, and it's awesome. And those tortured screams when it comes into that last riff, like in the last sort of 10-15 seconds, it's just awesome. So yeah, we're coming to the close of the album. Yes,
the album title.
You've got two bonus tracks after this, and those two bonus tracks have been on pretty much every edition, unless you bought this when it first came out.
I've not listened to them because of that, though. I wanted to get the original and go. I've been thinking to myself now, I'll listen to the remaster, because I'm always good with, I'm always better with the better sounding ones, but I'm always trying to go back now to when the album was first released and how much of an impact that had then. And maybe it's me just being a stickler.
I think it was just two songs that didn't fit on an LP. I think it was basically down to that. So when it came out on CD, or it was reissued later, they just stuck these two tracks on because they were left over, and they've been on every edition since, for the last, you know, I don't know, since the late 90s. So they've just, the last two tracks have just become part of the album. But this is the Scream Bloody Gore, the title track, is the actual true closing
of the album. So we'll treat that as such. And yeah, so Scream Bloody Gore kind of stretches out a little bit. And there is a... Although it is the last song, it does feel like a climax, this record, this track. It does yeah. feel like it...
It fits.
It's they're going all out on this song and making a point. And it feels like on this song they are making a statement and a lasting impression. When he screams, Scream Bloody Gore, he is screaming it like he is being tortured, you know?
Mm. Agreed. And it hasn't stopped and it hasn't slowed down and there's no bullshit with it either. Let's just have a little moody, melodic sounding thing where we talk about, I don't know, cuddles and love. There's been none of that here, and yeah, there's a lot nice to be bit. Said for albums.
There's no break. That do there's that. No. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a big fuck you from start to finish. The bass and drums and lyrics all in unison, and is exactly how it should be. Sound quality, yes, I've moaned about it, but it doesn't break it. It's heavy, gutsy, angry stuff, and it continues right to the end track. The bass again, I love the way that he's playing what the guitarists are playing. But bassists learn from that. Just learn from it. I tried to do it. I wasn't totally successful with it. I'm not the best bassist in the world, but if you can keep up with your fucking guitarist showing off cunts, then you're doing something right for me. 3 minutes in, it changes up again. It's menacey, slow, earthy riffs, and the middle section is spot on. And I love this album. I love this track. It's been great from start to fucking finish. There's not many albums that can do that for me first listen, where I've gone, hang on, that doesn't fit, that doesn't work. The proper first tracks on it, not including the extras, I listen to and I enjoy from start to finish. There's not many fucking albums for me that can hit me in the face so far and make me think I was a cunt when I was a kid. I was a cunt, yes, but actually I mean it. I've loved it. Great stuff.
Well, that's that then. You know, it's not that different. Like I said, the formula is pretty much kept the same throughout the album, and it's pretty much the same formula, but you know, it's 10 concise songs. It's a neat little package, and this album was a game changer. It all changed from here out. You know,
yeah.
37 glorious, gory minutes, and yeah, you've got two extra tracks on the later editions. What is it? Return of the I can't remember what it's called now. Return of the Living Dead. Is that it? And Land
Something
of
like
No
that,
Return.
Yeah. I didn't pay attention to them. I went back to 1987. That's where they are.
Yeah, Land of No Return and Beyond the Holy Grave. That's it. And yeah, it's not that much difference, really. It just carries on with what you've heard before. Two good songs, don't get me wrong. But yeah, you get it at this point. So
yeah, a statement of intent, game-changing album, delivered with a sledgehammer. I've got two ratings for this album. I'm going to rate myself at 16 for not hearing it. 0 for being a tit and not hearing it. For the album itself, I'm rightly slow at the time. It's a game changer. Why I didn't hear it, I have no idea. It's a 10. It's a 10.
It's a quintessential album. It's mandatory for metal's history and evolution. So for that, out of respect, I don't think you could get it less than a 10. I personally, I'm maybe around an 8. It's not one I listen to often, to be honest. But when I do listen to it, I do enjoy it. And
this gave birth to so much.
Yeah, I prefer what came later, and I prefer bands that took the template of this album and worked with it. So your Cannibal Corpses and your, you know, Obituaries and whatnot. But
I'm enjoying the fact I'm listening to it now and loving it. That's the thing. And I want to come back. I want to listen to the other ones, but I don't want to spoil the review. So I'm going to wait until it's time to do them, to listen to them. And as much as I want to listen to it, and I'm dead impatient to listen to them because I really enjoyed this one, I'm gonna push myself not to fucking listen to it.
Well, no, listen to it, man. Don't do a review based on two listens. Get used to it, you know.
I'm probably gonna live to regret not listening to them. But at the same time, I do get that little, wow, what have I just listened to? New listen, blow your head off. And I like capturing that in our reviews, but we'll see. I'm probably going to listen to some more of the stuff. But I've really enjoyed it. It's got that mix of stuff I like. It's heavy, it's brutal, it's shouty, the bass is on point. What more do you want to know? The sound could be better, but it's 1987. What the fuck do you want, like?
So, speaking of Death's history, at this point, after this album, they start gigging. I don't know. The early bits of Death's history gets a bit scratchy. You got to kind of piece it all together. I've read a couple of books. Obviously, that documentary just come out a few months back, and that didn't. It's still a bit. Not sure. But at this point, Chuck had moved from Florida to California. He and got together with Chris Reihart to do this album. And then afterwards, Chuck decided to move back to Florida. And Reifert, I don't know how the fuck you pronounce his name. So he's moved back to Florida to form a band. I think that's where the musicians were, really. And Chris respectfully says, no, I'm good, man. I'm going to stay in California. So they respectfully split. And Chris went on to form Autopsy. So, you know, and they, Autopsy were just one of the nastiest. They did death metal in a slowy, sludgier kind of way. And Mental Funeral was obviously their classic, but their first three, four albums are obviously death metal staples as well. And Autopsy is still going now. He's got a couple of other projects as well where it's like death metal but a bit punky, and Abscess, and he's did another band earlier this year actually, where he actually does vocals and guitar. So yeah, he's still going, he's still pretty prolific. And yeah, so then Chuck had gone to Florida and he'd formed a lineup. He'd got Rick back together with Rick Ross and Bill Andrews, that's it, on drums, and Terry Butler on bass, and they went on to do the Leprosy album. But that's another story. We will get on to that when we come to it. So yeah, so that was Scream Bloody
Gore. What have you got going on? Then where are you at and what are you doing with yourself? We always like to do a little plug of our stuff, and I'm going to plug my Xbox stuff as well.
Well,
in a minute,
I'm
so
struggling to get a day off at the moment, but I'm going to a couple of gigs this weekend. I'm going to watch Jeff Tate do Operation Mindcrime by Queensryche in full. Then Sunday I'm seeing Seven Dust for the first time. I've been wanting to see them since I was at school.
A lot of people have been talking about them.
They never tour in the UK, that's the thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm still doing my usual, mate. Check out brutalism.com. When the next issue of Metal Legion finally comes out, I'll let you all know. And I'm currently working on the liner notes for the reissue of The Will to Kill by Malevolent Creation. That's going to come out next year, I think. And when it all comes out, I'll let you know.
Yeah, so we've had to push because I just edited the show that came out on this date on the 30th today, and it's out. We had to push the review of one of the albums we're doing because we can't actually speak to Blasphemer because Joe's working his fucking head off and doesn't have the time to do it. We're a slave to what we do. I actually been modding older consoles and putting loads of retro stuff on. If you look for Gully's Games, Gully's GULYY _S Games, you'll see what I've been doing. I've got some cool shit. I had one that's cut in half and I've spray painted it white and put a green light on it. It looks fucking cool as shit. So go and look on there. I'm selling stuff on eBay all the time through there. But we have to push the Blasphemer a little later than we planned, so unfortunately, yeah. But I'm going to go along to the album night in London. I'm going to go down there and say hi, have a couple of glasses of wine and go home. So that should be fun. I can't think of anything else to plug. So with that in mind, thank you very much for listening. Just share it if you're listening to it, because you listeners, we do get quite a few listens at times, but you never fucking share it. Come on, don't be horrible. We spend a lot of time doing it.
We're not going to Patreon. We're not going to beg you for money. Just share it. That's all.
Yeah, we don't make money from this, and we never have in the years that we've been doing it, over 4 years now. So just share it. That's all you need to do. That's all we ask from you. And other than that, thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed as much as we have making them, because we really do. We've come back with a passion and a vengeance of late, and I'm really loving it. So thanks, and we're out of here. See you later.
Ta-da.